Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we'll have news on how your local representatives voted on the impeachment probe of President Joe Biden, pushed forward by House Republicans despite a lack of evidence. Then we'll have a report on funding approved by county supervisors to keep a migrant center open, but with no funding for migrant camps here in East County, where Border Patrol has failed to supply basic humanitarian needs, and what some local residents are doing to help. SANDIAG has approved adding an advisory member for the unincorporated areas of San Diego County, finally giving a voice to backcountry communities, but still no voting power. On People Power, we'll have a heartwarming story today about a Lemon Grove community group teaming up with a nonprofit foundation to provide coats that convert to sleeping bags for homeless people. Padre Dam Municipal Water District has filed a lawsuit against the Grossmont-Guamaca Community College District. We'll tell you why and what the college district says in response on our show today. COVID-19 is spreading again with holiday parties and indoor activities, but very few Californians have gotten the latest boosters. Health officials say that you should. Spring Valley's planning group has vacancies, and they're looking for two new members. Find out how to apply on our show today. AARP is warning seniors to beware of scammers this holiday season who are trying to steal your identity. Our newsmaker interview is with Kaylee Underhill from the Solar Rights Alliance. She'll have information about efforts to repeal a new utility tax, and we'll have details. On Sounds of History, we'll take a look back at a Christmas dinner long ago in Lemon Grove. And then we'll have a county health warning about a rise in whooping cough. So stay tuned today for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The House of Representatives has voted to formally authorize its ongoing impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden as Republicans unite behind the effort, even though they have yet to find evidence of any wrongdoing by the Democrat. Congressman Darrell Issa of East County was part of the 221-212 party line vote to approve the impeachment probe, which is examining whether Biden improperly benefited from his 53-year-old son Hunter Biden's foreign business dealings. The rest of the San Diego County delegation, Democratic Representatives Sarah Jacobs, Mike Levine, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas, voted no on the impeachment inquiry. Afterwards, Levine tweeted that he was disappointed to see, quote, extreme MAGA Republicans are once again pushing baseless impeachment threats rather than supporting American families. The White House has dismissed the inquiry as unsubstantiated by facts and politically motivated. Biden is preparing for a possible 2024 election rematch with his Republican predecessor Donald Trump. Trump is the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice, though not convicted, and he's currently preparing for four upcoming criminal trials. The effort will almost certainly fail to remove Biden from office. Even if the House votes to impeach the president, the Senate would then have to vote to convict him on the charges by a two-thirds vote, a near impossibility in a chamber where Biden's fellow Democrats hold a 51-49 majority. But it could help Republicans highlight their unsubstantiated allegations of corruption through much of the 2024 campaign, at a time when their own leading candidate is accused of fraudulent business practices, refusing to return classified documents, and conspiring to stay in power after losing the election, among other allegations. House Republicans allege that Biden and his family profited from his actions when he served as President Barack Obama's vice president from 2009 to 2017. They've zeroed in on his son's business ventures in Ukraine and China during that period. They have turned up evidence that the younger Biden led clients to believe that he could provide access to the vice president's office, but they have not provided a shred of evidence that Biden actually took any official actions to help those businesses or benefited financially from them. Biden, in a statement chastising House Republicans for not acting on his request for any of his domestic priorities or providing emergency funding to Ukraine and Israel, stated, "House Republicans are not joining me. Instead of doing anything to help make Americans' lives better, they are focused on attacking me with lies," the president said. Hunter Biden defied a committee subpoena to testify behind closed doors, saying he would testify only in public as he feared his words would otherwise be misrepresented. He stated, "There is no evidence to support the allegations that my father was financially involved in my business because it did not happen." Members of the committee said they would take steps to hold him in contempt of Congress. Hunter Biden, who has described his struggles with drug and alcohol addiction, has also been the subject of a years-long criminal investigation. He faces federal charges that he lied about his drug use while buying a handgun, and separate charges of failing to pay $1.4 million in taxes. He has pleaded not guilty to the gun charges, and his lawyer says he has repaid his taxes in full. As for those charges, Hunter Biden says, "In the depths of my addiction, I was extremely irresponsible with my finances." But he calls efforts to impeach his father over this shameless and beyond the absurd. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Local volunteers in Hukumba and Boulevard, isolated East County border towns, are seeking humanitarian aid for immigrants via a new crowdfunding campaign on GoFundMe called Hukumba Migrant Camps. Volunteers set up this fundraising account due to a lack of support by government entities, which have failed to help masses of border crossers still arriving on U.S. ground. The first intermittent waves of undocumented migrants began scaling the border fence near rural Hukumba Hot Springs, population about 500, last May, as East County Magazine was the first media outlet to report. Border Patrol has directed these migrants into barren detention sites with no food, water, or shade. Our report back then led to an investigation by the Southern Border Communities Coalition and filing of a complaint against Homeland Security alleging mistreatment of migrants and violation of both U.S. and international law. Despite this, the dire situation has continued and grown even worse. In recent months, food, water, blankets, jackets, and other urgently needed items are being supplied almost entirely by volunteers through donations. San Diego County supervisors did vote December 5th, immediately after a new member, Monica Montgomery Stepp, joined the board to approve $3 million to supplement earlier amounts spent on a migrant welcome center. But desolate rural stretches where migrants first enter the U.S. remain without funding. Supervisor Jim Desmond was the lone vote against the allocation of the $3 million, arguing that the federal government should be allocating funds and that the burden of migrant assistance should not be shouldered by the county. The federal government has not responded to the county's requests for direct funding to aid migrants. Volunteer Sam Schultz and family, who reside in Hukumba near where migrants are crossing from Mexico to the U.S., still make and deliver 600-plus meals every day to migrants stranded at camps off of Interstate 8 at the easternmost edge of San Diego County. The area is high in desert wilderness, with high winds and increasingly low temperatures. With help from some churches and humanitarian aid groups, such as Border Kindness, local efforts have been going continuously since September. Local residents' efforts began far earlier. But many are wondering when real aid will arrive and when migrants won't be waiting in the close to freezing night temperatures for days. The Red Cross declined to help, awaiting a signal from Border Patrol, which apparently never came. Several groups concerned about the migrant crisis also have opposed allocating more funds without more transparency on how funds are actually used. Immigrant Defenders Law Center has raised concerns about alleged wasting of public funds on what the organization has called an ill-equipped welcome center while people die in open-air detention sites, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Volunteer leader Schultz also raises a question as to why these migrants are not just allowed to pass through the existing points of entry, such as San Isidro, Tecate, and Calexico. He asks, if you're going to let them through anyway, why not let them in where people are supposed to come in? In response to those who oppose undocumented border crossers, many of whom seek asylum in the U.S. after fleeing desperate conditions in their homelands, such as war and cartel violence, Schultz asks, what would happen if we stopped doing this? Some desperate migrants have paid smugglers to bring them into the U.S., but don't even know what city they are in or how to apply for asylum. So in addition to providing meals, jackets, blankets, and water daily, the volunteers Schultz coordinating now also receive sheets printed in 11 different languages with information needed by stranded migrants, clarifying where they are and what they are expected to do, as well as what likely steps are for them to take in the immediate future, such as credible fear interview they will be expected to conduct with border officials, and suggestions on how to find a volunteer lawyer. There are children and women among the hundreds coming over, but most migrants are young age. Their countries of origin include Turkey, Afghanistan, China, Argentina, India, Guatemala, Colombia, Haiti, and others. Mexicans are not represented in the current groups arriving, according to Border Patrol on scene. Some will face deportation, while others may be granted asylum. Many seek reunification with family members already in the U.S. Amid the holiday season, all have hopes to begin a new life in a new land with help from the kindness of strangers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, has unanimously voted in both Executive Committee and Board of Directors meetings to approve adding an advisory member to represent the county's unincorporated areas. All 18 community planning groups in the unincorporated areas had banded together earlier to form the Association of Planning Groups San Diego County, or APG, to put pressure on SANDAG to include an advisory board member to represent those unincorporated areas. Although the position is only advisory with no voting power, it will finally provide a voice for previously unrepresented backcountry communities. Rural communities have frequently voiced frustration over proposals such as a mileage tax that penalized rural residents in areas lacking transit, or policies to push forward big energy projects in small towns and wetland areas, or lack of concern over big developments using up precious groundwater resources. In a press release, APG commends SANDAG for its historic vote, adding, "This vote by SANDAG recognizes the contributions and importance of the unincorporated area residents to the San Diego region and demonstrates SANDAG's commitment to their inclusion and equity mission statement." According to APG, the SANDAG Advisory Board member will be elected from the membership of the newly formed Association of Planning Groups San Diego County. Travis Lyon, chair of the Alpine Community Planning Group, calls the decision great news. Robin Maxson, the current chair for APG, told East County Magazine that she is excited and inspired that both the unincorporated communities and SANDAG were able to advance a critical partnership in planning for the San Diego region. She concludes, "I believe in the goodwill of those entrusted with leadership, and this vote by SANDAG demonstrates what can be accomplished when the unincorporated area speaks up and SANDAG listens. This is a win for everyone." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Back in October, Teresa Rosiak, founding member of the Lemon Grove Improvement Council, received 100 sleeping bags that convert into warm coats for the unsheltered, thanks to a grant from the Lucky Duck Foundation. Rosiak has already distributed over 75 of them directly to the homeless in Lemon Grove during her group's weekly volunteer outreach. Rosiak is not afraid to roll up her sleeves and get to work for the benefit of the community. The Lemon Grove Improvement Council organizes valuable events throughout the year, including an annual back-to-school backpack drive, monthly trash cleanups, free events for children, such as the Citrus Festival, and a weekly homeless outreach, all thanks to community volunteers. Rosiak told East County Magazine, "A lot of our efforts are based toward the youth in our community because they are so neglected. We don't charge one dime because we want to give back to our community." The Lucky Duck Foundation is a 501(c) nonprofit that funds and activates high-impact programs that alleviate the suffering of homelessness throughout San Diego County. Rosiak's group has been doing outreach to homeless people in Lemon Grove for over 2 years. They meet every Monday at 2:30 p.m. by the Giant Lemon on the corner of Main Street and Broadway. Volunteers not only hand out food, warm clothes, socks, and sleeping bags, they also do an intake of each person, directing them to services they might qualify for that they're unaware of, such as EBT benefits, help with substance abuse or domestic violence, safe housing, and transitional housing. Last year, the Lemon Grove Improvement Council partnered with the Lucky Duck Foundation to provide snack bags with water, a sandwich, and a snack such as fruit. Last year, the Lucky Duck Foundation gave the group 30 coats that convert to sleeping bags. This year, Rosiak asked for 100. Her grant wish was filled, and she's already distributed over 75 of the 100 much-needed sleeping bags to unsheltered people as temperatures drop in winter weather. Rosiak says they really are life-saving and warm for these individuals. The sleeping bag coats look like a regular warm winter coat, but a flap folds down from the back with a sleeping bag attached. It closes with Velcro to form a cocoon, keeping the person inside warm. Rosiak says, "It's very heartwarming for me and my team that we see them being used when we are driving around town. The coats are made by individuals who used to be unsheltered. It costs the Lucky Duck Foundation about $150 to make each sleeping bag coat." Rosiak is grateful for all the help she has received. "This takes a team," she says, "and I just want to thank the people who do come weekly to help make this happen for our community. We have made a huge difference in Lemon Grove." How big is that difference? As of June, her team of volunteers have helped 64 people get off the streets of Lemon Grove into a shelter, permanent housing, or a mental health facility. If you would like to help, you can donate to the Lucky Duck Foundation or volunteer by calling Teresa Rosiak at 619-991-1004. The Lemon Grove Improvement Council also accepts donations of socks, underwear, blankets, toiletries, and clothing. That number again is 619-991-1004.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Padre Dam Municipal Water District says it is filing a lawsuit against one of its biggest customers, the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, over allegedly taking water through unmetered lines without paying for it. The suit seeks over $200,000 for the unauthorized water and three times that amount in further damages, along with costs of the suit and attorney fees. The dispute stems from an agreement the two agencies signed back in 2015 that outlined how the college district would assume repair and maintenance for water infrastructure at Grossmont College, as it was constructing new buildings there. The agreement outlined steps the college had to follow to enable the transfer of water lines. According to Padre Dam's suit, the college district never made the required improvements to achieve the transfer of the water lines. Those improvements were estimated by Padre to be about $15 million. In 2019, the fire marshal visited Grossmont and told the district it needed to either make upgrades to campus buildings by adding fire sprinkler systems or meet higher fire flow pressure requirements. Grossmont hired a technical expert who told the district it could meet the fire marshal's requirements and increase water pressure by having its main water tank filled to a higher level by more than 432,000 gallons, according to the suit. Padre Dam said it couldn't do that because it would result in water quality issues that cannot be reasonably mitigated and were cost prohibitive. Padre Dam claims in the suit that it wasn't permitted to do the necessary improvements requested by Grossmont because that would amount to its ratepayers subsidizing Grossmont, which is illegal under California law. Then in February 2022, according to Padre's suit, it discovered that Grossmont College made some unapproved above-ground alterations to Padre's utility lines and fixtures, using water through an unmetered connection to service the college's main chiller plant building. Padre Dam claims this was a clear case of theft, and in February of this year filed a claim for over $25,000 for unpaid water. Ann Kruger, Grossmont Cuyamaca's interim director of public information, says the district was disappointed to learn it was being sued. She says the district had yet to be served, so it doesn't yet know all the specific allegations. Kruger says, "We have been discussing several related water issues with Padre Dam officials for more than a year in a good faith attempt to reach a global resolution. It is surprising that under such circumstances, Padre Dam would accuse the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District of water theft in an effort to distract from Padre Dam's failure to provide sufficient water infrastructure." She adds that over the past several decades, the Grossmont District purchased far greater water capacity, paying tens of millions of dollars from Padre Dam than was ever provided. According to Kruger, the college district has repeatedly tried to resolve the dispute through mediation to save taxpayers and ratepayers the expense of litigation. Bill Pomering, president of the board of directors for Padre Dam, says it's deeply disappointing that his agency has to use litigation against Grossmont Cuyamaca. He told East County Magazine, "Our intention has always been to find a fair and equitable resolution to the water system transfer and system upgrades." According to Pomering, it is unacceptable that Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District wants to make Padre Dam customers pay the bill for improvements needed to support its campus water system. He adds that the water district does hope to find a mutually agreeable resolution that serves the best interests of both Padre Dam customers and the Grossmont College community. Padre Dam Water District provides water and sewer services to a large swath of East County, including Santee, El Cajon, and Lakeside. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The annual winter rise in COVID infections is here, but so far, only 10% of Californians have gotten the latest booster shot, according to the state vaccination dashboard. The most recent COVID booster shot came out in September, but only 27% of people over age 65 had received it as of December 8th. California State Epidemiologist Dr. Erica Pond says now is the time to get not only the COVID booster, but a seasonal flu shot.
These vaccines are safe and effective. You can get all of them at the same time, and it is not too late. And this is the time right now as these viruses are increasing and circulating. And before we have a lot more travel and holiday gatherings, please go out there and get vaccinated and not only protect yourself, but your loved ones and our community.
The RSV vaccine is also available for infants and people over age 60. To make an appointment, go to myturn.ca.gov. Health insurance plans are required to cover the vaccines free of cost. If you have questions about any of the vaccines, check with your physician. Dr. Pond says older people in congregate settings are especially vulnerable to this latest Omicron COVID variant, but early studies show the shot is effective.
We're especially concerned about, as far as being a high-risk setting where these viruses can spread very quickly, is nursing homes. And currently, only about less than 10% of nursing home staff and about 26% of residents are up to date.
Around 75% of Californians got the first round of COVID vaccinations at the height of the pandemic. Pan theorizes that booster shot rates are low due to a combination of busy schedules, COVID fatigue, and concerns about efficacy. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement for the County of San Diego's Spring Valley Community Planning Group. The Spring Valley Community Planning Group is looking for residents to fill two vacancies. The planning group advises San Diego County on planning and land use matters, such as construction projects, as well as proposed changes to commercial and residential properties. The group has various county agencies present and advise its members so that the group can be constantly aware of all facets of community life in Spring Valley. Besides construction projects, the group's members learn about land use planning, law enforcement, traffic, parks, and the impacts of local, state, and federal legislation on our community. The group is a constantly updated source of all things Spring Valley. The group consists of 15 community members, and there are currently 2 vacant positions. Chairman Christopher Pierce says, "To function effectively, it is best to have a full slate of members to be the eyes, ears, and voice of Spring Valley regarding the wide range of topics." The Spring Valley Community Planning Area encompasses approximately 11 square miles in unincorporated San Diego County. Several neighborhoods are located within Spring Valley. Those include Bancroft, Brookside, Spring Valley, La Presa, Dictionary Hill, and Sweetwater Village. If you would like to find out more about how you can be a force for improving and protecting Spring Valley, please contact Christopher Pierce, Chair of the Spring Valley Planning Group, via email at svcpg4@gmail.com. Again, that's SV, as in Victor, CPG, the number 4, @gmail.com.
Holiday scammers are upping their game this year, according to experts at AARP Fraud Watch Network. Bad actors bombard people with emails, text messages, and ads on social media that could infect your device and steal your personal information if you click on the link. Liz Buser works on AARP's Fraud Prevention Programs team. She warns against any deal that seems too good to be true.
Please, please, please do not click on the link. Instead, go to a web browser and type in the address for the company that is supposedly offering the deal. Make sure that you're going to legitimate websites and you can navigate to them again.
She says it's probably a scam if you get an unsolicited communication, if the person seems to be playing on your emotions, if they urge you to act immediately, or if they ask for payment via gift card, wire transfer, cryptocurrency, or a peer-to-peer payment app such as Venmo or Zelle. Also be aware that the first few entries that pop up on search engines are often marked sponsored, which means they are really ads that may have been purchased by scammers. Buser also warns people not to fall for calls or messages claiming to be a relative in trouble. She advises hanging up and calling back because caller ID can be faked.
AI technology, including voice mimicking software, deep fake videos, and chatbots, give scammers the ability to impersonate anybody. It could be your grandchild, a police officer, or even your spouse. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Holiday travel can turn into a nightmare if you book through an illegitimate website, so don't click on the social media travel links. If you suspect a scam, you can contact aarp.org/fraudwatch and or report it to the Federal Trade Commission's website, which is reportfraud@ftc.gov. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Kaylee Underhill. She is the Advocacy and Development Director for the Solar Rights Alliance. And we're here today to talk about AB 205, which the legislature passed to create what supporters called a fixed charge for utility rates, but which opponents call a utility tax. And it's poised to become the largest utility tax in the nation. Solar Rights Alliance says this will be unfair to consumers, and they're fighting to get the utility tax repealed. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So this new law, if it's not repealed, would eliminate, as I understand it, a $10 a month cap on utility taxes and instead mandate a new tax of between $30 and $70 a month. Tell us how that compares to, you know, other places around the country.
Yeah. So first of all, that's close. But one point of clarification is that right now, the California Public Utilities Commission has the ability to add a $10 a month utility tax to ratepayer bills. And they've had that ability for many years. Mm-hmm. That is in line with the national average, which is about 10, 11 bucks a month. What is happening now is that when the legislature passed the big budget trailer bill, AB 205 last year, it included this little known provision requiring the California Public Utility Commission to charge all ratepayers a new uncapped utility tax that would be based on household income. That bill, AB 205, it went from proposal to law in just 3 days with no public hearing. Yeah. And no public discussion. Yeah.
And exactly. If I understand, it would establish a fixed charge and provide for consumers to be billed for energy use based on income. So I guess the arguments for it were that some low-income customers would get reduced rates and wealthier people would pay more. Tell us what's wrong with the plan in your view.
Right. So it's just a little bit more complicated than that. So if I could just expand on that a little bit.
Yes.
The concept is that now the monopoly investor-owned utilities and some organizations are proposing to charge all ratepayers the highest utility tax in the country, $30 to $70 a month. And just to be clear, you'd have to pay this utility tax even if you don't buy any energy from the utilities.
If you're off-grid, all doing solar, and you know,
if you're connected to the grid at all, for the pleasure of being connected to the grid, you have to pay this utility tax. And because it's totally uncapped, this is something that in the future they could ask the CPUC to raise, just like they ask the CPUC to raise rates, and we all see how that goes, right?
Yeah.
So what's happening is that proponents of the utility tax are saying, okay, if we lower rates a little bit, if we trade you lowering rates just a smidgen for this uncapped utility tax, it'll have the impact of lowering bills for working class households, and it'll get people to electrify. But an organization called the Clean Coalition, which has been around for over a decade, these are serious people doing serious research, looked into all of the utility tax proposals. And what they found is that even a utility tax of $30 a month will raise bills on anyone with a small energy footprint.
So if you're off-grid, you added solar, you live in a little condominium or something like that, that's a big increase for somebody who's not really using very much energy at all.
Yes, yes, exactly. And again, I just want to be clear about the distinction between on versus off-grid. If someone is truly off-grid, that would mean they're like totally disconnected from the utility. So this is if you're connected to the utility at all, which is the vast majority of Californians.
Right, you're connected, but let's say your solar is taking care of 90% of your power usage or something.
But let's also say that you don't have solar, because frankly, solar users are not the majority of people who are going to be harmed by this. It's anyone who lives in a small space, like an apartment or a small home.
Well, there not are, to mention those who live in a large space and are going to be charged even more, who are maybe struggling to pay the bills, and now theirs are going up too. So it's all kinds of people, it sounds like, are going to be.
It's all kinds of people, yes. But I do want to really, really make this clear that the majority of the impact will be on people who have a small energy footprint to begin with, because this slight reduction in the rates doesn't really benefit them, especially because of them. Yes, exactly, exactly.
Not rich people. These are people of, you know, moderate incomes, you know, or maybe lower incomes.
Well, and that little bit of a reduction is then far outweighed by this fixed fee or utility tax, whatever you want to call it, that gets tacked on top. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like robbing Peter to pay Paul, basically.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Is this going to impact ratepayers who are on community choice plans, as well as those who are still paying utilities like SDG&E to buy the power directly from them?
Great question. The answer is that this applies to all residential customers of PG&E, SoCal Edison, San Diego Gas and Electric, and all community choice aggregators.
So there's no getting around it, basically.
Right.
Are there any incentives in here at all for consumers to conserve energy or to switch from natural gas to less polluting electricity from solar or wind? It didn't appear so, but
Well, that's a great question. So in AB 205, again, this big budget trailer bill that created this provision that created this whole mess, mm-hmm. there is nothing that says that bill savings have to be used to electrify. There's nothing in there about freezing or lowering rates. And the Clean Coalition found that any of these utility tax proposals will not incentivize electrification. In fact, under any of them, it will be cheaper for people to stick with gas.
Wow. Why are our electricity rates here the highest in the nation, or one of the highest in the nation? For years they were, and then I think at some point SDG&E quit cooperating and providing information to the folks that were gathering the information, but we're certainly, if not the highest, one of the very highest in the whole country. I mean, what is it going to take to actually get these prices down, and what's causing them to be so high? I guess maybe we should answer the second part first.
The reason that electricity prices are so high in the state of California is because of our over-reliance on long-distance power lines and the cost of liability when those lines spark wildfires. Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, the investor-owned monopoly utilities get a guaranteed rate of return on every long-distance power line they build. And that then gets passed down to the ratepayers. So they're making their money when they build these long-distance power lines. And then when they spark wildfires, dime for dime, that goes to all of us too. So in adding in this utility tax, they're creating another mechanism by which they can continue to gouge profits from all of us. Now, it is the case that there are lots of solutions to high electricity prices. It's just that a utility tax isn't one of them because it doesn't get at that underlying problem.
What are some of those solutions?
Well, here at Solar Rights Alliance, we're big fans of rooftop solar. And so the best, biggest study that's ever been done into rooftop solar, which is called the Vibrant Clean Energy Study, demonstrated that if we can keep rooftop solar growing in the state of California, we all stand to save $120 billion over the next 30 years. That's $295 per year per ratepayer, regardless of whether or not you have solar. Yeah. So more rooftop solar benefits all of us because it means we don't have to build all those long distance power lines. And it means we have less power lines that then spark wildfires. So that's one solution. And I want to go back for just a moment, if I could, sure. to your question about, you know, what are proponents saying about this? Because I think this gets at another set yes. of solutions. So I do want to clarify that it is the case that folks on subsidy bill credit programs, CARE and FERA, mm-hmm. will see small but temporary decreases in their electricity bills.
How temporary? When can that go up?
Well, the problem is that even if a utility tax like this one causes the bills for those folks to go down just a little bit, mm-hmm. once the rates rise again, and we all know they will, mm-hmm. boom, that gets erased. And meanwhile, millions and millions of people who are just above that subsidy cutoff and are also struggling will immediately see their bills go up. And I want to give one example. The CARE cutoff for a family of one to two is $39,440 in the state of California. Imagine a single mom trying to rent an apartment, making just $40,000 a year, trying to support one kiddo. She is jumped above.
More than half of that going just for her rent, you know, maybe just for the rent.
Exactly. And then she is going to be just above that cutoff. She's going to get slammed by this thing. Her bills are going to go up. Say you got a retired couple living on a fixed income in an apartment in San Diego. Their bills are going to go up, such on and so forth. So another thing that we could do is better help those folks. There are lots of different groups that are trying to fight for an expansion of CARE and FERA or a freeze to their rate increases to give them real relief. And again, more rooftop solar and batteries, a real rebate program, for example, in the state of California that helps more people get solar, get batteries, get some energy democracy, that would be great too. So there's lots of solutions that get at the actual underlying problem. And a utility tax is not one of them.
Absolutely. I mean, the utilities are not here to, you know, to speak in their own defense. But I suppose if they were, they might be saying, you know, we've had a lot of expenses, all these fires, we have to repair lines, we have to maintain these lines to prevent future fires, you know, inflation, cost of everything has gone up, we need more money to do it. How would you address that concern?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say is it's time for the utilities to support clean energy initiatives that reduce all those costs. Mm-hmm. It's time for the utilities to focus on repairing and maintaining a grid that is flexible and functional and does not lead to wildfires and blackouts. And the way to do that is by supporting a wide range of clean energy initiatives and by getting on board with the changes that are coming. So there's a lot that they could do.
Local grids like Borrego has, where the power is produced right there where it's used, instead of building, you know, giant wind farms in the desert and power lines, you know, that go for hundreds of miles.
Right. Like community solar in a local like brown lot that can't be built on anyway, that gets connected to all the, you know, adjoining homes or buildings. That would be great. Solar on like highway right-of-ways. These are lots of things that we could certainly do and that the utilities could get in on if they chose to.
They could all be done. When is the California Public Utilities Commission expected to make a final decision about this? Can the legislature, you know, weigh in at this point again? And also, why haven't there been any public hearings? Are there any planned?
All great questions. So first things first, AB 205, which again was passed by the legislature, says that the CPUC has to enact this utility tax by July of 2024. So essentially they have to make the decision about how much it will be by July.
Be somewhere between $30 and $70 a month for basically
Those are the proposals on the table, but I want to reiterate that the actual provision in AB 205 has no sideboards and no recommendations for the amount that the utility
tax could be. So it could be more than that or less than that?
Totally uncapped, right? The leading proposals have coalesced around the $30 to $70 a month. And I really want to reiterate here that even a utility tax of $30 a month will have the impact of increasing bills for millions and millions of low-income and working-class folks, right, who live in apartments or small homes. So the only solution here is for the legislature to author a bill to repeal the utility tax provision in AB 205. We cannot leave this up to the CPUC. We cannot trust them to get this right. The legislature created this mess. They need to be responsible for fixing it. A series of legislators have signed a letter that came out of the assembly heavily criticizing the utility tax. We'd like to thank all the assembly members who signed that. And also, now is the time, instead of punting it to the CPUC, where we cannot trust them to get this right, to take action, repeal it, and be the hero that your constituents need.
Tell us about the growing coalition to oppose it. You've mentioned some legislators. I know there's a bunch of other organizations. Can you give us an idea of some of the types of groups that are coalescing together to try to get this thing repealed?
Absolutely. So there is a coalition letter that has been signed by over 200 organizations that represent a broad swath of impacted groups, peoples, and areas. So for example, several tenants' rights groups have signed on, like Tenants Together and East Bay Housing Organizations, as well as some affordable housing groups like Gallagher Community Housing. Mm-hmm. We also have a wide range of frontline community groups that have signed on, like California Environmental Justice Coalition, the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, and CEEE. We also have a series of groups representing low-income folks like the Western Center on Law and Poverty and California Alliance for Retired Americans that have signed on. And then, of course, a wide range of environmental and climate groups have also signed on because this will have the impact of undermining conservation efforts that have been working for decades. Yeah. So groups like...
Send me a copy of that letter. I'd like to see
that. You know, I'll happily send you a letter. Yeah. So there's dozens and dozens of environmental and climate groups on there as well.
How did the San Diego County Assembly and State Senate legislative members vote? Do you know that? And have any of them that voted for it said they might change their mind? I know just looking here in East County that I didn't look everyone up, but I saw that Senator Brian Jones voted no on this. And so Randy Vopel, Akila Weber voted yes on it. I'm not sure about the rest of it, but I also know that some of them may have voted for it, you know, for certain reasons, but not fully understood the ramifications. Are you seeing much shifting? You know, I mean, how did they vote? And then are you seeing anybody say they're going to change their minds?
Great questions again. I will say, first of all, for anyone who is interested in looking up either the bill or who voted, that information is publicly available. And you can just, you know, Google AB 205.
I'm going to put the link on our website.
Right. Great. Okay, yes,
as soon as we
yes.
get the story up about this after this,
right.
we will great, have great. That eastcountymagazine.org in our green scene section. You'll be able to find that and look up how your member voted. And then right. so, what else can people do if they're concerned about it?
Well, so sorry, just to answer your initial question.
Oh, sorry.
So Republicans as a group have come out against the utility tax because mm-hmm. it's a tax and they don't like taxes.
No taxes.
Democrats right. largely voted for it because it was the budget bill. Mm-hmm. And many of them have informed us and their constituents that they didn't know it was in there when they voted for it, which again, this is a big budget trailer
right.
bill. So there was a lot of different stuff in it. And this particular provision essentially flew under the radar. And I think it is telling that as far as we are aware, no legislator has taken credit for authoring the utility tax provision in AB 205. I will say that the fact that these 22 assembly members have signed on to this letter harshly criticizing the utility tax demonstrates real growth in thinking. Some of those legislators, to be fair, mm-hmm. were not in their seats when this was voted on, but nonetheless, their constituents will be impacted. And lastly, I just want to mention that Senator Berman and mm-hmm. Assemblymember Becker mm-hmm. co-authored an op-ed, and I think the title says it all. The income-based electricity bill provision is a mistake that will raise your rates. Let's not shy away from real solutions. Agreed. And the real solution is to repeal the utility tax provision in AB 205, which they can do by authoring a bill when they're in session in January. So to answer your question about what people can do, please call your legislators and ask them to repeal the utility tax provision in AB 205.
Yeah, and write them and email them.
Write them, email them. If you're interested in speaking with them in a lobby meeting or at one of their town halls, you can hop right on our website. We have a number of resources to help with that. We also have a bunch of coalition partners who are working on this as well. So feel free to get those, you know, groups involved or reach out to any of the coalition partners and we can help get you what you need.
Very good. Folks, if you tuned in late, we are speaking with Kaylee Underhill, who is the Advocacy and Development Director for the Solar Rights Alliance. And we've been speaking about the utility tax provision of AB 205. Where could people get more information, Kaylee? Can you give us the website for your organization?
I certainly can, but I would actually recommend that folks go right for the organization who did the deep dive into the data, which is the Clean Coalition. So the Clean Coalition did a webinar that explained their data and explained the impacts of the utility tax. So that's where I would suggest people go for the background and the information. If people would like our explainers, they can go to our website, which is just solarrights.org. And there is another group that also did a webinar, CEEE, and that organization you can find at CEEETruth.org. That organization is a frontline community group who looked specifically at the impact on frontline communities. And so that can also be a helpful resource for people. So I'd recommend those three.
Great. I'm Googling here as we speak to see what the address is for Clean Coalition. And it looks like it is clean-coalition.org. So you can go there to get that research.
And CEEE, for anyone who doesn't know, is the Coalition for Environmental Equity and Economics.
Excellent. I'm going to let you have the last word here, Kaylee. What else would you like our audience to know about AB 205 and the utility tax?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the time. And I think it's just worth reiterating that even a utility tax of $30 a month will have the impact of increasing utility bills for millions of low-income and working-class folks who happen to live in an apartment or a small home that just happens to use less electricity or anyone conserving energy. So if you're listening, please reach out to your local legislator and ask them if they will introduce a bill in January to repeal the utility tax provision of AB 205 before it's too late. There is still time. Action can still happen. And it's up to you.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on and educate our audience about this very important issue. And thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. We will also be posting the podcast on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history. It's the holiday season in warm, sunny East County. As we count our blessings, we can't help but think of those who also walked beneath that same benevolent sun years ago in somewhat less happy circumstances. One such person was Dr. Eben McGregor, one of very few doctors in East County in the 1930s, and the only game in town in Lemon Grove. Here are his words, written on Christmas Day, 1956, nearly 60 years ago. I awakened this morning thinking of my early days in Lemon Grove and of the dusty but very pretty little town as I first saw it. O little town of Lemon Grove, thousands of lemon trees, nearly everyone had a horse. Lots of people had asthma and had come here for the good climate. I thought of S.D. Eckler on Central Avenue, who came here with $30,000 and sunk it into land that was ruined by the Mattoon Act in the 1930s. Eckler started a huge rabbit ranch. Poor man took credit in the 30s so people could have rabbit stew. I recall Dr. Charles Good, the dentist, with a big citrus ranch and a nice house, also on Central Avenue. He fixed your teeth for a dollar in the 1930s. And good old Ed Fells, of the Fells Naphtha soap fortune. Not that he had any of that money. He taught me lobster fishing, completely illegal, and the ocean was cold in winter. I thought of that awful segregation case the school board started when they built the Mexican school, and then the Mexicans went on strike at the packing house. How the school board thereafter began to eliminate the Mexicans from the payroll. People like Andy Anderson, good people, Art Ahrens, Reverend Kurtz, and Herman Przybylski were part of that mess. Herman Przybylski had come here from Poland. He had a big citrus ranch and horses. He thought I was a communist because I had run for office on the Democratic ticket. I didn't know the meaning of the word communist in those days. But Herman had me investigated, and I will never forget when he came over and told me I was okay. We lived across the street from each other, for Pete's sake. I was his doctor. And no communist either. That reminded me of Herman's boy Frank, who had terrible asthma and was good friends with the adopted son of Colonel and Mrs. Bryan, who lived in the big show place where Ambassador Hayes, later President Hayes, had visited. The adopted son was always tippling in the parlor and helping himself to the brandy during tea parties. But most of all, I remember Tony Sonka, he who ran the famous general store next door to my home and medical office on Main Street. I remember saying to Tony, "Do you remember that truck that came through Lemon Grove on Christmas with flour and potatoes and somebody's old clothes and other stuff? It was all for the needy. You loaned us a little house to store the clothes. The Depression had struck so hard. I had several thousand patients who had no money. One month I worked from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, and I took in $86 in cash. Tony, you fed them, and I tried to keep them alive." Dear listeners, those were the words of Dr. Eben McGregor, who went on to lead the Veterans Administration for President Franklin Roosevelt in World War II. Dr. McGregor's house was designed by the great Alberto Traganza, also a Lemon Grove resident. That was in 1932, but it took 4 years to build because the doctor had no money, because his patients had no money. Patients with construction skills worked off their bills in sweat equity on the good doctor's house. It still stands today on Main Street, an important historic site. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen O'Field.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. San Diego County health officials are warning about a rise in cases of pertussis, better known as whooping cough, and they're recommending that people get vaccinated, especially those most at risk of becoming seriously ill. The number of whooping cough illnesses jumped from 12 in September to 57 in October. Spikes happen every 3 to 5 years with this disease. The last peak was in 2017. The current rise in illness reports is the first since the COVID-19 pandemic, when prevention steps also kept pertussis down. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer, says we're seeing pertussis spreading in rates similar to before the pandemic. This is concerning because we know that post-pandemic many people are experiencing vaccine fatigue, yet what we have learned over the last several years is that vaccines, hand-washing, masking, and other precautions help curb the spread of illness. Pregnant women and people who come into close contact with young infants are strongly urged to be vaccinated. Newborns are especially susceptible to pertussis since they are too young to be fully vaccinated. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose for a week or two, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent spread of disease to others. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the following schedule for the Tdap vaccination that helps protect people from pertussis as well as tetanus and diphtheria. A Tdap booster is recommended for pregnant women early in their third trimester and during each pregnancy to protect their newborns. Young children need 5 doses of Tdap by kindergarten at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 15 to 18 months, and 4 to 6 years of age. After that, the first Tdap booster is due at age 11 years. All students entering 7th grade are required to have proof of a whooping cough booster immunization. 1 dose of Tdap is recommended for adults 19 years of age and older if they didn't get Tdap as a teenager. After that, getting a Tdap vaccination instead of the standard tetanus shot every 10 years will also reduce infections. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and the booster shot for their children and themselves through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies also offer vaccinations for a fee, and anybody who's not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at minimal or no cost. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, call the county's immunization branch at 866-358-2966.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Dusty Summer Road, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we'll have news on how your local representatives voted on the impeachment probe of President Joe Biden pushed forward by House Republicans despite a lack of evidence. Then we'll have a report on funding approved by county supervisors to keep a migrant center open, but with no funding for migrant camps here in East County, where Border Patrol has failed to supply basic humanitarian needs, and what some local residents are doing to help. SANDAG has approved adding an advisory member for the unincorporated areas of San Diego County, finally giving a voice to backcountry communities, but still no voting power. On People Power, we'll have a heartwarming story today about a Lemon Grove community group teaming up with a nonprofit foundation to provide coats that convert to sleeping bags for homeless people. Padre Dam Municipal Water District has filed a lawsuit against the Grossmont-Guiamaca Community College District. We'll tell you why and what the college district says in response on our show today. COVID-19 is spreading again with holiday parties and indoor activities, but very few Californians have gotten the latest boosters. Health officials say that you should. Spring Valley's planning group has vacancies, and they're looking for two new members. Find out how to apply on our show today. AARP is warning seniors to beware of scammers this holiday season who are trying to steal your identity. Our newsmaker interview is with Kaylee Underhill from the Solar Rights Alliance. She'll have information about efforts to repeal a new utility tax, and we'll have details. On Sounds of History, we'll take a look back at a Christmas dinner long ago in Lemon Grove. And then we'll have a county health warning about a rise in whooping cough. So stay tuned today for the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.